Hello, Jess. It's AC here. Just recording this after a phenomenal client lunch to kickstart silly season. Anyway, look, I just wanted to bring to your attention and reach out about the latest product from AC Limited. It's the Chassis Monster Vest, perfect for the gym, CrossFit session, or even a bit of banter in the office. And if you're a prop and got a bit of a wobbly chassis, it's a great little vest to wear on the beach, so now I can see your horrendous rig. Click on the link below. It's only £30. It's for the high net worth individual. Love and chagrin.
Good afternoon, Marshall Parsons. Here speaking. How may I help you?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just wondering if I could speak to someone just in regards to the market, just to understand how buoyant it is at the moment. I'm considering in the new year, sort of, you know, buying a place in the Clapham area.
Have you actually? And are you? Do you know if you've been registered with us before? Have you been looking with us previously? Or
no, I don't think so. I've been in renting for a number of years in the Clapham area, but recently had a child, so looking for a bit more of a secure. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, beautiful little girl, 8 weeks old, little Johnny Jono. And yeah, just want to see, you know, what the market's saying.
So in terms of kind of buoyancy of the market, it's not crashed in terms of what the media is saying at all. It has slowed down, but that's purely because actually we are in the Christmas time of year where people are would much prefer to be going to see their friends at a pub instead of going for a viewing.
I love the social silly season.
Exactly. I mean, I've literally just looked at my diary and kind of all of our negotiators have got from 7 o'clock, they've all got different, obviously, viewings, but also then they go into their dinner parties and whatnot. So it's definitely that silly season that slows down.
Yeah, I've got a lot of mates who work in property in estate agency, but also in sort of real estate. And they all absolutely love the lash. They say Christmas time is, you know, ridiculous. Like, they're just smashing it up.
Because if that's ours, but that's everyone else's as well. A lot of our buyers decided to take a slight pause on it just because, they've got work drinks now, or they're going to see friends, do Christmas shopping, all of these different things. So it's a very seasonal reaction to the market. It's nothing to do with kind of the discussions of the crashes. I think that has definitely had a slight impact on it, but not in the sense that kind of prime London, for example, Clapham, Battersea, between the Commons, those areas don't really get affected. It's more, if you're talking about crashes, it's more North England and kind of Macclesfield, Wigan.
Yeah. I don't really care about the North. I haven't been further than Watford, if I'm being honest.
Well, I wouldn't recommend going any further other than Newcastle.
Yeah. Totally. I think actually it's quite a good idea. What I might do is just pause my search, enjoy silly season and the old Lasharoo and the Birrios. And then get back, Jan, sort the rig out, get back into, you know, strict calorie diet and, just make sure the rig's in check and then start the property search. And you think in the new year the market will be buoyant?
Boxing Day is the highest number of registrations for new buyers.
Really?
Vendors will take that as, okay, that's a good time for me to be putting my property onto the market. The first 2 weeks are kind of a interesting period because it's people going back to work, going back to the gym, as you say, that sort of thing. But once everyone's a bit more settled, kids have gone back to school as well, vendors will start to be looking to put their properties or have conversations with my manager's out valuing quite a bit at the moment, but he will get busier during the new kind of once everyone's settled down.
Yeah, exactly. And what did you say your name was?
My name is Theo, sir.
Theo. Okay, yeah. I know a couple of good Theos. Good strong name. I mean, are you not around next couple of weeks for a beer, are you? You know, maybe we can catch up and have a couple of beerios and just chat market and buoyancy.
Unfortunately not, Archie, not at the moment, but I can. What I'll do is I'll take your details and then on the second...
What about a nice lunch? I'm happy to take you for lunch. Flots and Jets, we could go there. They do delicious poached eggs on toast with avocado. All on me.
That's very kind of you, Archie. I can't take you on that just yet. I think if you sell a place for me, then I'll take you that. No, that's very kind, Archie. For the time being, I'll take your email address and then I will drop you an email so you have my contact details and then we can catch up properly in the new year and see what the market's saying there.
So email address. It's AC_24kg. That's the that's my minimum bench press with the weights. Dot rig. That's RIG. / Banter, which is BANTERRR, at hotmail.com.
I'm not sure that I'll be able to get. Is there another one in terms of, because I think this slash might throw my system in terms of an email. Do you have another email address?
Yeah, I have another email. Just let me, probably the best one. Yeah, if you just do Archie, A-R-C-H-I-E, dot Curzo, which is C-U-R-Z-O-O, dot chassismonster@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thanks, Archie. If you want to give me a call in the new year,
yeah,
we'll
100%.
Catch up properly.
No, I will. I'll put it on my list. I will put that on my list to get on the market, sort the rig out, and call Theo for lunch, coffee, or dinner.
Best luck with the rig, Archie. Enjoy Christmas, and we'll catch up in the new year.
Love and champagne, my friend. Love and champagne. Great to chat business. Love and champagne.
Great
love
to chat.
And champagne. Bye-bye. More love, more love, more love, more love.
A bloody free. Have I told you I've got a high basic salary? Making money, now that's the key.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 111 of the RigBiz Podcast. My name is Freddie Claude, and after a disastrous weekend for England, I'm joined by the number one fan and cheerleader, Mr. Archie Curzon. Archie, not the way we wanted the weekend to go.
Not the way we wanted to finish the autumn,
no.
As the fans, as captain of the Twickenham Faithful.
Yeah, you must be.
It's been a disappointing autumn international.
You must be absolutely gutted.
Yeah, I'm gutted on two fronts, really. One, no one ever comes to me after the match, for my opinion, and you know, as being the voice and the heart of the fans, you know, I could really analyse that. Sure, first game, we didn't turn up as fans.
No.
And that had an effect on the team. But I feel like we really pulled ourselves together. I spoke to a number of people in the RFU and said, look, we need fireworks. And they gave us fireworks. So that on that front, I'm disappointed.
Oh, literal fireworks?
Yeah, literal fireworks. And then, on that front, yeah, I'm disappointed that you know, the media have picked up that, you know, I've been leading the fans. It's been a grueling autumn series for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm absolutely shattered.
One win out of four.
Yeah, disappointing. Don't want to bring it up. And obviously, there is a review of my captaincy absolutely happening at the moment, which is worrying. But I have said, look, there's not much else I could have done.
So it's not just Eddie Jones under pressure. No. You're also.
Yeah,
you may be losing your job as well.
Yeah, I might be losing the captaincy.
That is gutting.
It is.
Who chooses that? The RFU?
No. There's a separate committee
panel
in Clapham South.
Right. Okay.
A couple of old boys who've been watching Twickenham for the last 50 years.
Right.
And they know their stuff. Not just about rugby, but how the crowd should act. So I've got that Friday, so we'll see. So on that front, and then second of all, you know, I'm gutted for rugby. Really, it's a very, very tricky time, and you know, I actually feel like I want to speak to the nation, not just the players, not just the coaching staff, but the nation. There's no better way. I need some music, Cloders. You'd be naive to think that England rugby players, Cloders, go out there every weekend and don't want to win. Of course they want to win. You'd be even more naive to think that Eddie Jones is a bad coach. You just don't become a bad coach overnight. But what is disappointing, and I don't care if the players listen to this, is that I'm just a bit bored of them not going out there and enjoying what they do and having a smile on their face. You see me, mate. 6:30 at Clapham Common Tube Station, I'm absolutely buzzing. I've got a big smile on my face, I'm stepping onto that tube, getting absolutely squished, knowing that I bloody love what I do. I love making money, I love having lunches, and I love doing deals, okay? And I'm happy. Every day, I know how privileged I am. I think what I am sick about is rugby is one of those sports, but ultimately, all the players are tangible. That's what made rugby. You'd go to the Ship and be able to do a bum funnel with Jamie Roberts, but more and more so, players are just shielding themselves, thinking that they're a sports star and not a rugby player. And they don't show any personality. I'm not going to name names, but how many people we've asked to come on this podcast? And they said, look, I love your work, but I'm just really worried about what I'm going to say. Who cares? Be a human. Show that you can make a mistake. Because it's getting a bit boring. And rugby in a whole is just at a point where, great, you want to get new people to watch the sport, Clodis. I tell you what, people who don't watch rugby, if they watch that Saturday night, they are not going to be watching rugby again. So you may as well go out there, throw the ball about, have a bit of fun, and if you lose 49-0, I don't really care. The banter has gone from rugby. Look at all these people trying to do social media about rugby. It's fucking boring, mate. Change the tune. Let's have a bit of chat. Let's be different from other sports. Something needs to change. And I'm considering calling Paul Sackey and going down there next Monday and busting down the doors and saying, right, I want names and numbers because I'm sick to death. You, CEO, are getting paid too much money to have no impact on the game. So out you get, Sackey, get in, RB is number two, and we'll change the game. We will change English rugby so we can win the World Cup. Enough said.
Well, that was an absolutely brilliant rant. Hopefully the...
Hopefully someone's listening.
Well, hopefully the guys high up at the RFU are listening.
I imagine after that rant, someone's going to nominate me from MBE.
Well, I can imagine they may do. But talking about people high up, I saw you were somewhere special on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Nipped off in your, what was that, a surplus jacket? Not very smart.
Yeah. I was off to the Legends Ball.
Legends Ball?
Yeah.
How the hell did he wangle invite for
just
that?
Just invited me. If you're a legend, you get a free ticket.
Right, okay.
And Dan Carter was speaking there.
Really?
Yeah.
Have a chat with him?
Great, great fly half. By all means, sounds like a great guy. If he speaks for half an hour, it's dangerous because you could fall asleep.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't suggest listening to him while you're in the car.
No.
But littered with names. Met Jason Robinson.
Really?
Alex Good was there.
Goody.
Had a good drink. Saw Skeezy.
Oh, Lazowski.
Yeah. Saw
another
him.
Another turn.
Saw Rory Jackson, the ex-Scottish fly half.
So lots of fly halves.
Saw Lawrence Diallo. Saw George Ford.
Oh, Fordy, yeah.
He gave me a test there. But I think it was quite good banter. So it was great. It was great to be there.
Any deals come out of it or not?
A lot of people were excited. Well, I saw a number of high net worth individuals and, you know, hopefully that night will pay off and will come to fruition and produce a phenomenal Q4 or Q1. I've arranged a number of lunches and drinks with a lot of people. So, yeah, it was a great, great night. But talking about business, Clodis, I do think it's probably time to do a Curzon's Crash, but I saw a Christmas special because my company, AC Limited, have got a number of products this year for the little ones.
For the child market.
Yeah, so should we get into it?
Let's hear all about it.
Hello, kiddos. Welcome to my crash.
Welcome to Curzon's Crash. Now come and enjoy your day.
Hello, boys and girls. Hello, mummy and daddy. Hello, Freddy.
Hello, Arch.
Oh, you got another smiling face. Just remember, smiling means you're happy. And if mummy and daddy are listening to this with you in the car, well, they've got bloody good C.H.A.T. What's that spell?
Chat.
That's right. The big C, the happy H, the attacking A, and the tremendous T. Complete the word chat. That's our word of the day, chat. Now, boys and girls, guess what? Santa Claus is coming. Yay! Christmas time. It's always a fun time for parents and children. And this year, AC Limited have got three products out that we think will be perfect for the little ones. First up, we've got some 0.15 kilogram dumbbells for the little ones. So this Christmas, they can get in shape. Now for the little ones who are looking to work out, we've got this amazing inflatable kettlebell for £30.99. I've been working with my daughter with it and it's great because they're already realising what good form is. And lastly, for the little ones who want to get into the business world, we've got some miniature business cards for those little ones who want to do some networking at nursery. Well, that was a fun Curzon's Crash and we're really excited here about Christmas, aren't you, Freddy?
Yay!
And remember, this silly season, don't drink too much milk!
Well, Archie, I know you're sick and tired of the lack of chutzpah, the lack of energy, the lack of atmosphere which the young players are bringing to the game.
Yes.
The lack of balls.
Yeah.
And so I said, fuck it, let's go old school. Let's go get a guy who worked in the amateur and professional era.
I love old school.
Heineken Cup winning, ex-Leinster, ex-Irish international, Bernard Jackman.
There's a guy in my office who was really old school, like smoked 20 a day.
Right, okay.
Yeah, he's dead now, but I bloody love the old school.
Well, we got Bernard Jackman on. How about that?
Sorry, who?
Bernard Jackman.
Who's that?
Ex-Irish international, won a Lion King Cup.
That will make this interview extremely interesting. I've never heard of him. Right. Let me tighten up my Windsor knot and get ready to have some seriously good banter.
Sorry, guys. How are you?
Oh, here he is.
That is a beautiful background, can I say. That makes you look like a learned man.
It's all about perception, guys. It's all about perception.
I've got a very similar setup at home, but instead of like books, I just have shelves of men's health magazines. Because I like to go back over the years and just see the tips and tricks. It's important to keep the chassis in nick. And there's some great articles on protein. So I don't, if you ever need or you need, want to learn about protein, maybe we could do a Zoom call. You could read to me some literature, and I could read to you, some excellent Tupperware plans.
Sounds like a fair swap, except it sounds very boring.
Not for me. Not for me. Well, not for me. I love the Irish accent, and it'd be great. I just picture now, like we take it in turns to read to each other, different evenings. So you'd read to me, I'd fall, be in bed tucked up. I hope you don't mind. I like to sleep naked, but you won't see the bottom half. And then likewise, next night I'll read to you about Tupperware plans. It'd be great.
Sounds interesting. Yeah, I'll come back to you.
Okay, write that down because I'll email. Berno afterwards.
Well, I should say we are delighted to be joined by ex-Irish international and European champion and the incredibly charming Mr. Bernard Jetman. Bernard, obviously Ireland on top of the world right now, doing well. I mean, a bit dodgy against Fiji, but that's by the by. But let's go back in time to really kick things off. And am I right in saying that you never actually planned on having a career in rugby? You studied Japanese and business at university. I mean, on that, well, did you ever have the ambition to go and broker deals and have lunches with Japanese clients? I mean, how did rugby pop up?
Yeah, so basically, my father's a cattle dealer, right? So he's third generation. We buy and sell cattle. And he wanted me to go home when I was 18. So I went. They sent me to boarding school. So I had a better education than he had the opportunity to have. But I'm the eldest of five. He would like me to come home. I will go home eventually. He's still working away on the farm. And I needed to be creative, and how could I get 4 years in Dublin in university that would prolong the inevitable of being at home? So I wasn't a representative schoolboy in rugby. I was on my senior cup team, the first team, but I wasn't seen as being somebody who was going to go and play international rugby. So I decided to study a course in international marketing and Japanese, and told my father, it's worthwhile because I'm going to sell beef to the Japanese for you. And in 2019... a long time after I finished my course, the Irish Beef Marketing Association needed somebody to go to Japan for the Rugby World Cup who had beef, rugby, and Japanese in their background. So I put my hand up. I was the only one. And I went over there and spoke at a conference where they had 140 potential beef buyers in the room. And I was one of the four speakers about why Irish grass-fed beef is the way forward. So eventually I did. I did sell some beef to Japanese, even though it was 20 years after my degree.
Bernard, that is phenomenal. I'm disappointed I wasn't invited because I don't know how much you know about me, but I like to invest in the built-on market. Very much like the crypto market, but built on is really flying. A very buoyant market at the moment. But that is phenomenal. Do you speak fluent Japanese?
No, that was the problem. I might have oversold my ability. It was a 4-year degree, 2 years in Dublin, a year in Japan, 6 months in college, 6 months of work, come back and do your final year. After my second year, rugby went professional in Ireland, and Warren Gatland was the Connacht coach, and he gave me a contract, so I never went. And then because I didn't go, obviously, my level of fluency was pretty poor. And then, to make it worse, 20 years later, obviously, I hadn't kept it up. Realistically, I'm going to have to put a lot more time into it if I want to get good at it.
But, Bernard, I mean, can you get by? It's just because there is a little chica that slid into my LinkedIn the other day, and she's Japanese. I'm just wondering if we could organise a Zoom call and you could be my translator, just because I will be going out there Q2 next year to do a couple of deals.
Yeah, if it goes past trying to sell sirloin steaks, I could be out of words. But look, I think you've got a different need than I can help you with.
No, it's fine, because my nickname for my member is Sirloin Steak.
Okay, right. I can get you to first base, maybe. Okay. After that, you're up to
yourself.
Sounds
great. Write that down.
Well, Bernard, obviously, you mentioned Warren Gatland there, and he was the man who really convinced you to go professional. We had Paul Sackey on the podcast recently, and he was saying that Warren Gatland loved to scrap. Do you ever remember seeing Warren get physical? I mean, obviously, he nearly had that punch up with Shane Williams back for Wales, but when you were with him in Connacht?
he physically hurt me because I actually played against him the season before Rugby Went Professional. He was over here coaching a club called Galwegians as a player coach. He took a sabbatical from teaching, and we played against each other. And that actually, even though he screwed me in the scrum and battered me, he remembered me. And 4 months later, when he got the Connacht job, he rang my club coach, who was another Kiwi, and he said, look, that hooker wasn't too bad as he worked a go. So, he was a very strong player. And I didn't know at the time, you know, how good a player he was. I didn't know he was an ex-All Black and he sat behind Sean Fitzpatrick 36 times or whatever. So I was very lucky to have someone like him, a specialist in my position, coach me at an early age.
Do you think he is going to be, next couple of days, he'll be announced as the next Welsh coach for the time being?
He loves a challenge. He believes he should be at the top table. Like, if you're a competitive animal like Warren Gatland is, and you get a chance to go to a World Cup, you know, with a nation you know really well, a nation maybe on its knees a little bit at the moment, certainly a long way from where it was when he left, which was a semi-final of a World Cup in Japan, I'd say his competitive nature would want him to take it. Now, I don't know if... I think he'll improve them for sure, but can he get them back to the heights that he had them at? Two reasons that maybe he can't, or three reasons. One, that generation of players that he had are either at the end of their careers or have finished. Welsh regional rugby is worse state now than it was when he was there, even though he always improved it. He always improved the players when he came into international camp. But probably the last one, which is the most interesting, is he won't have the band back together. He won't have Sean Edwards, Robin McBride, Rob Howley. You know, they coached together for the guts of 10 years. And you know, it wasn't a one-man show. Warren is he's a very good front of house, but he's not a dictator. You know, he gave those coaches time and responsibility. So that would be even harder for him to go back in there with coaches that he didn't select and hasn't got a track record with and try and turn around a team who are obviously low on confidence. But, you know, I think that if they ask him, he'd find it very hard to say no at the same time. For 12 months and go to France and see what he can do.
Well, Bernard, obviously you turned professional playing for Connacht under Warren, played for two seasons, but it wasn't until Sale where you got your first real taste of success with that 2002 European Challenge Cup victory. Just take us through your memories of Manchester. I mean, obviously it was just the early days of professionalism. Who were the big characters and how did you boys celebrate that title?
It was a brilliant time for me to go into Sale because Brian Kennedy, over the course of that first year, came in and brought some finance and we signed, you know, rugby league guys like Apollo Perlini from St. Helens, Jason Robinson. But most importantly, I suppose, the academy started to churn out top-end players, Charlie Hodgson, Mark Quaido, Steve Hanley. So it was a really exciting time to be there. Manchester was a great city to live in. I came from Galway, which is a party town. Manchester was a party town, but a lot bigger. I'm a United fan, have been since 86. So it was just brilliant. And the Premiership was class back then compared to where the Irish rugby set up that I left. I mean, the Premiership was an established competition. Yeah, really good fun. Some of those bus trips, either up to Newcastle or down to London and back, a few cans, you know, a bit of a sting song, and then back into Dean's Gate. I wouldn't mind going back to that life. Our attitude was still, you know, win or lose on the booze. And, it was way looser than it is probably now. I know now they probably, you know, they get 4 or 5 times a year where they can really kind of go hard at it and let off the shekels. But we were probably getting paid to do a job that we were still kind of had the amateur ethos as such. And it probably took 5 or 6 years for that to really drift away.
That's why I've stayed in the semi-pro game, just because I absolutely love the Berrios, and like win or lose, you know, I'm on the booze. And you know, nowadays you can go into the professional stage and do bum funnels,
right,
or put a toothbrush up someone's bottom, you know, without someone complaining or a lawsuit, whereas in the semi-pro game,
still okay.
Yeah, it's brilliant, absolutely love it. How many toothbrushes were used in Sale on the bus? Many?
I didn't see any of that. This see no evil, hear no evil. That's the way I operate. I hope if I don't call out others, they won't call out me.
No, I think it was more prominent in the teams in London. I know there were sort of several toothbrushes that were missing in that era at Wasps.
Commercial break. Well, I think it's time we had a little update on the incredible Athletic Greens product, AG1. because I've been taking it for about 6 weeks now and feel absolutely incredible. As we go into silly season, your body's getting battered by too much booze, food, carbohydrates, probably occasional cigarette. All great fun, but the next morning you feel absolutely shocking. And as Archie says, this is a time to be doing business as well as pleasure. So to be able to feel incredible every day, all you have to do is take Athletic Greens' incredible product, AG1. Gives you better gut health, more energy, optimized immune system. It's just absolutely incredible. And it only costs about £2.50 a day. 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source ingredients, probiotics, everything you need to feel incredible. They formulated this genius product. They've taken every good vitamin, everything which can make you feel amazing, and put it into one easy morning shake. So right now it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system for silly season and beyond with convenient daily nutrition. Just one scoop a day, that's all you need, and you'll feel absolutely amazing. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens and the Rig Beers are giving you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is click on the link in this podcast bio or go to athleticgreens.com/regbiz. So take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. You're welcome. Pre-sale, you managed to tour with the Ireland team in 98, albeit it wouldn't be another sort of 7 years until you got your first international cap. But that was, you know, talking of old school, that was the last rungs of old school rugby. What was that tour, you know, to South Africa like? You must have seen some crazy sights amongst your the older guys.
Yeah, it was mad. Keith Wood had just been on that 97 Lions tour, which obviously, with the sad passing of Doddy Weir, you know, we're seeing clips of the living Lions again. And it was 1998. It was an old-fashioned tour. I think we were there for 6 weeks. It was crazy. But I remember one incident, and it was Gatlin was the coach. He was the head coach because Brian Ashton had left kind of suddenly just before the tour. And Gatland had a good season with Connacht, and he came in to take the tour, and he brought me and four others as kind of development players, and then he had his 32 or 33 senior players. But I remember one night we were just about to play a team called Boland, and the night before the match we were in a team meeting room, and Gatland took out this bottle of liquid, and he said, look, when he played for the Chiefs or played for the Maoris or played for the New Zealand, and a Northern Hemisphere team came over, they used to laugh at how pasty and unathletic we used to look, right? And he said, you know, what he wants to do was trial this fake tan with two players, and if it worked, everybody would basically wear it for the following week against the Stormers. So he named myself, some, you know, I was like Casper the Ghost. I was so pale. And then a guy called Trevor Brennan, who went on to play for Toulouse, and we were the two palest guys in the room. So he said, and probably the two most naive, I would have done anything. I was 20. Trevor was a lad from a working class area who, you know, was so excited to be on the tour. He would do anything as well. So Gatlin put his room together. And he said, lads, you're wearing this tonight. Actually, you're putting this on tonight, and if it works for you guys, we'll all do it tomorrow. So there's no instructions. He's taking instructions off the bottle. Now, I have a 16-year-old daughter, so I know all about fake tan now. But back then, I didn't have a clue. And so we went up anyway, and we put it up all over each other. He did his back. He did my back. I did his. And there was no obvious transformation. So we put on another layer, right? And then we put on another layer. And then we said, fuck this. This is shampoo or something. There's no fake tan in this. Went to bed, not knowing, obviously, it takes a while to have an effect. Woke up in the morning like an Oompa Loompa from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, stuck to the bed, fake tan everywhere, right? So all you could see was the whites of my eyes, right? And my teeth. It was a fucking joke. And so anyway, into the shower, try to scrub it off. It doesn't come off that easily, right? So down to the team room for breakfast. Everyone's in fits of laughter, which is all fine. Bit of crack, but whatever. But the problem was I was subbing that afternoon. As soon as I started to warm up, it started to run, right? So my jersey was just covered in fake tan. And I was like, oh, the match was actually live on Sky Sports. They did a lot of the rugby then. I came on with about 20 minutes to go. There was fake tan all over me. I just wanted to get into the scrum. And they had a hooker called Dale Stanton. And he just fucking... I just wanted to get into the scrum and get playing, whatever. And he stopped and he took off his bind from the props. And he goes, what the F are you, boy? And I was like, fucking long story. Let's just get on with it, whatever. So... yeah, I never got Gatlin back for stitching me up on that.
That is brilliant. Well, when you did eventually get your first cap 7 years later, 2005 tour to Japan. Was there a big initiation? I mean, obviously still quite old school, but getting into the professional era. But was there something a bit naughty or not?
No, what they do there is, what they did then at that stage, and I know it's moved on a lot, was basically everybody else who isn't making the first cap has to buy a drink over the course of the night. So effectively, you know, the loose head prop who has 20 caps, he'll grab you with a tequila, you know, and then 10 minutes later, the toilet prop will grab you with a Jaeger bomb. So you don't remember a lot about it. The challenge is to try and not be sick and get home in one piece. But I've seen some people written off quite early, to be honest.
We're talking about relationships. You played under Michael Checker at Leinster, and you're part of the squad that won the Heineken Cup. But let's be honest, you didn't get on with each other. You had a bit of a relationship with Tumultuous and then fell apart. He apparently held you to ransom and didn't let you quit from the game. Just tell us through how your relationship was so messy with one another.
Yeah, look, I really admire Michael Checker for his will to win, what he did for Leinster. I wouldn't have a European Cup if it wasn't for him, and I really appreciate that. And we got on really well for the majority of my time there. Just my last season, 2010, so we won a European Cup in 2009. My last season, 2010, my susceptibility to concussion increased massively, so impacts that weren't affecting me at all were actually giving me mild concussion syndrome, and I was very conscious of that, but I was also very focused on trying to win a second European Cup, because I spent most of my career trying to get into the European Cup. So when I was in Sale and when I was in Connacht, I was playing the Challenge Cup, which it's not the same, you know what I mean? And then I got to Leinster and I was like, right, we should be winning the European Cup. So I won one, I wanted to win another. In around January, the doctor and I had a chat, and the doctor said, look, I'm not happy to sign you off for a contract for next year. You know, your body's in bits and you're getting a lot of knocks in the head. And I said, okay. And then I had a chat with family and I said, look, I'm willing to keep playing to try and win another European Cup, but I'm not willing to keep playing to try and win a Magnus League, which was the Celtic League. So anyway, I had an agreement that as soon as that Champions Cup season was over, I would finish. And look, I was only taking away two games or three games because we got to semi-final. But if we had got beaten in the group stages, I would have stopped then. And I said, so anyway, we got beaten by Toulouse in the semi-final of the Champions Cup. We were still in the hunt for a Magnus League. I think we had three games left. Might have had two. The other three hookers in the squad were all fit. So I said, look, that's me done. You know, I have to try and minimize the risk. And fairness to him, He it was the wrong time to go to him. So it's probably a bad time by me because he was still disappointed about having, obviously, us having lost. He was leaving as well. He was leaving to go to Stade Francais. And yeah, he basically felt that I should put the team first. So we had an argument. And look, at I don't know who's right or wrong. At the time in my book, I was quite upset about it and critical of him. Probably with time, I realized that desire to win is what made him special and what makes him a very powerful head coach. So, yeah, that's the story to it, you know. And we ended up having other people had to get involved to try and, you know, make sure that I finished that season, not playing, but just without being totally cast aside.
Am I right in saying that, you know, if we could get you and Checks in a room now and, you know, to recoup the relationship and, you know, in a way like a Jeremy Carl sort of come together... would you be open
need,
for that?
No, we're good. Like a lot of things, a few pints and some time together solves a lot of problems. So 2019, we had our 10-year reunion and Checks and Rocky Elsom and all our foreign players came into Dublin. We had a big gala dinner, black tie, 800 people, and we buried the hatchet. So no need for an intervention now. If things deteriorate in the future, lads, I know who I'm going to call.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. I didn't know that, but, you know, I have a difficult relationship with my father, Alistair. He's had a number of marriages and our relationship is quite tumultuous. But knowing that, you know, a few pints can settle that, just write that down.
I'll write that down. I'll get in touch with
the olive branch and say, look, why don't we meet at the Ned? I'll take you for dinner.
Inferno
is a nightclub. I can't be honest. I take my dad there. He'll probably be on his fifth marriage. he's quite the character. So probably Ned's better. You know, I want him to be. He's got three kids to this marriage. Let alone the other five kids he's got from the other previous four marriages. So
I'd say the apple didn't fall far from the tree, did it?
No. Well, I've just recently had a daughter, Johnny Jono Haskell Abendanon, cousin. She's a beautiful little thing, 8 weeks old. I met this girl from Middlesbrough. Long story mentioned on a podcast. Had to pay her off. I'm a single father now. It's a wonderful thing. I'm really looking forward to her speaking. She's 8 weeks now, so hopefully in a couple of months we'll be able to have some banter.
Well, post retiring from the game, you get a job as forwards coach for Grenoble, who were in the second division at the time. Now, Ben, we've spoken to a lot of players who've gone out to France, you know, changing the scene from Ireland or England, and they're absolutely shocked by the change in culture there. Ollie Phillips spoke about how they served red wine in between the morning and afternoon sessions when he was at Stade Français, and cheese. But apparently you had a problem with the desserts.
Do I look like a man who has a problem with desserts?
for your players,
sorry. What I had the problem with was the frequency that we saw them. So we'd given the players an extra week off. So it's 6 weeks off. We brought them back in. We body fat tested them as standard practice. And a large number of them came back way outside the accepted limit of the increase in body fat they were allowed to have over the 6 weeks. So effectively, we were going up to a training camp up in Alpe d'Huez, who are a sponsor of ours. Grenoble's pretty close to that ski resort. And Grenoble's very hot in the summer, so you go up there, it's a little bit fresher because of the height, and it's obviously quieter in the summer. So we were up there anyway, and next thing I saw, you know, dessert. A breakfast was basically, you know, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of ham, bread, and then these cakes, right? Cakes from the night before. And the players were hammering into them. Then lunch, we had new cake, okay, for dessert. And then at night, we had cake as well. So I basically went to the team doctor, who over there, the doctor is king. So the doctor is the guru. I questioned the fact that we were having desserts morning, noon, and night, particularly when players had come back in terrible shape. So there's no point. We had Fat Club, which is basically extra conditioning at 6 o'clock in the morning for the heavy guys. And I'd always been a Fat Club myself, but there was no point in us beasting these lads at 6 o'clock in the morning if they're going to come straight into the breakfast and start smashing eclairs, you know what I mean, and croissants. So he told a section of the players, and there was nearly a revolt. Yeah, there was they weren't happy, and he also said for their well-being he felt the cake and stuff was happy. And I look at all, I said, I'm not someone, I have a sweet tooth myself, I enjoyed the desserts, but for a professional environment where, you know, you're going to be playing the likes of Toulouse and Racing Metro, Racing 92 now, you know, Toulon were very strong at the time. It's pre-season, you know, there has to be a bit of sacrifice. So the majority of people felt that I was being, you know, overly professional or overly harsh.
It's interesting you say that, Bernard, because I've actually got a similar thing I have adopted in the office environment. Because I, for me, feel, especially when you're working in a city where you're trying to make a lot of money, you know, body fat, low body fat equals good business deals. So, I mean, I take my body fat every day. I take a number of the people in the office, their body fat, and, you know, we have Fat Club in the office. And if they are in Fat Club, they're in at 5:30 melting the phones, because I don't know if you know this, you incredibly burn a lot of calories just in, you know, smashing the phones. It has been put up to debate, and we had to stop because one of the girls in the office took exception for me taking her body fat count every day. But I mean, it's the generation we live in, the world we live in, because, you know, it's not old school.
I'm at peace with it, but I admire your level of diligence.
Well, Bernard, you only managed to survive 1 year as head coach before being chucked out. There was talk of player revolt. There was talk of players not wanting to, you know, buy into your modern coaching philosophies. How messy was it? What were the problems?
I'll give you an example of the issue. So we got GPS units the year before. So we went to the president and said, look, we don't know what we're doing at training. We don't know what we're doing at matches. And we got GPS units, which, you know, it's widely accepted our help. And some of the senior players didn't want to wear them because they felt we were spying on them, you know. So again, if that's your mentality, should you be a professional rugby player? I don't think so. But if you can't change, you know, the job of a coach is try and convince them of the value of something. I obviously failed in terms of being able to convince them that having a game plan was valuable, or knowing what you do on a Tuesday is valuable. So, but some people you just can't convince, you know. The guys who were the problem were just probably bang average players who were just trying to survive.
Funny you say about the GPS there, Berno. I'll be looking at doing that. I'd like to know where my team are consistently in the afternoons. They say they go for client meetings, but actually having a GPS, I'd be able to know.
Well, Bernard, within a year you were head coach of the Dragons, now in the URC, but the WRU failed on their promises to deliver on the millions of pounds of investment they were going to give you. The whole club was a bit of a shit show, and you were released from your contract only halfway through. What are your biggest regrets from your time at the Dragons?
I have no regrets at all, to be honest, because it wasn't a place set up for success at all.
What was wrong?
And the reason probably we ended the terms was because I asked them to invest in the region and invest in Welsh rugby, and it fell on deaf ears. And I actually think that the success of the national team under Warren made everybody way too comfortable. And they didn't actually see the car crash that was coming and is coming now for Pivac. And week in, week out, the Welsh regions are not competitive in the URC. They won't be competitive in the European Cup. And the under-20s have been poor for the last 4 or 5 years. And those issues were there, but people ignored them. So I think this may be, if the right people sit down in a room and actually take stock of where Welsh rugby's at. I'm not interested in picking up a salary as a coach. There's easier ways and better ways to make money. You make more money doing other things.
Or like investing in Biltong.
Biltong, yeah. Well, that's a market that I'm going to start Googling now.
I'll be writing you for for a small fee of £50,000. I can make you probably double that in a good solid 10-year period.
Okay.
Does he have chat, or does he have no chat? Does he have chat, or does he have no chat? Does he have chat, or does he have no chat? Gonna ask those questions now.
Does he have Bod, chat? Brian O'Driscoll. Rog, Ronan O'Gara.
Chat.
Paul O'Connell.
Chat.
Johnny Sexton.
Chat.
Rob Kearney.
Chat.
Sean O'Brien.
Lots of chat.
Jason Robinson.
No chat.
Charlie Hodgson.
Great guy, but no chat.
Rory Best.
Chat, to be fair.
Luke Fitzgerald.
Chat.
Peter Stringer.
No chat.
And Mark Cueto.
Chat.
Bernard Jackman.
Bernard, that Connie was phenomenal.
Thank you so much. That was incredible.
Love and champagne.
Thank you, boys. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, actually, what an absolute legend.
Oh,
Bernard
good
Jackman.
Guy. Good
you
guy.
You
don't
recognize
yeah.
him, right?
No, I still don't recognize him, but really enjoyed me. I'm surprised I didn't know him.
It's sad to hear him getting fired from, two teams in 3 years. I mean,
yeah.
Clearly not the best manager.
Unfortunately looking guy, but good luck to him. I really enjoyed him. He's given me a lot of Christmas spirit. He certainly could do with some suns.
So Archie, when this podcast is playing in our thousands of listeners' ears, we will be at the start of a marathon.
Yeah.
We will be at the start of what you call silly season.
Yeah.
So just give us a bit of a flavour. How are you kicking yours off? It's now Thursday, 1st of December.
Well, I mean,
what's
it's,
going on?
It's hard. I haven't got my diary here at hand, but I'm out every day.
Okay.
Whether that's a lunch or dinner or sometimes both. It is a month where business, in a way, gets put on hold.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about client relationships. It's about going out there, enjoying your clients, enjoying the lash, and actually delivering on the banter. I absolutely love it. Like I've said, this is a real year where we can get stuck in. Client lunches.
Yes.
Client dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Client drinks.
Oh.
But amongst that, you have Christmas lash-ups with your mates.
Yep.
Christmas rugby lash-ups with the rugby boys.
Yeah.
You have work Christmas party. I mean,
old school get-togethers.
If there's one word to describe the month of December, it's just lash.
Yeah.
Non-stop lash. But, you also have to take in consideration a rig.
Yes.
So a lot of the workouts I'll be doing this month, I'll be hungover. So I've had to change or tweak a few things. Probably won't lift as heavy, but I'll probably be doing more reps.
Yeah.
So just working on the formation of the muscle, not making it bigger, just making it look good. But yeah, look, there's no buts about it.
So basically,
the chassis is going to take a beating, mate. And come January, I'll be back on that 300 calorie a day diet.
But every day sort of has to become that Sunday roast spirit of sweating out the night before.
Yeah. There's no time to feel sorry for yourself. I mean, it is about putting a smile on your face and getting out there and getting on it.
Well, I know you.
I cannot bloody wait.
Well,
I was built for silly season.
I know you've got plans.
It's like one big stag do.
Well, I know you've got plans this evening, so I should probably let you go.
Yeah, I'm out.
Where are you
off to? I'm actually in the city for a few drinks. Probably end up in the Ned. A couple of Japanese clients. Taking them out. Don't speak a word of English.
Amazing
but
the amount of business
God.
You do with the Japanese.
Oh, mate. Yeah. Primarily, that's where I do a lot of business. They just love my chat.
Yeah.
But they don't understand a lot of it.
No.
But I think the way it's translated into Japanese, it is just like, my chat's bloody good here
yeah,
in the
yeah.
UK. But translating Japanese, it's like supersonic, next level. They're like going back and saying, this guy is phenomenal.
And also, nice thing about the Ned is you've got all those international offerings. So whatever international client you have, if you want to stay close to home, sushi, if you want to get Mexican or whatever.
Exactly, close. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it is a hotbed of culture. The Ned, it really is. It is. It's like going on holiday sometimes. I have described it like that. You go through the doors, you think, what country am I in? Really looking forward to it. And a great pod, mate. Great pod.
Well, good to see you.
Looking forward to delivering the pod throughout silly season. We have got a couple of exciting things.
We've got some incredibly special
Carol
guests coming
singing,
up.
Session to be announced probably next week.
Yes, we've got some special silly season going on.
And also, there will be a Christmas Day special.
There will be.
Which I'm looking forward to. Are we going to do that on the day?
Well, I'll probably be with my family. What about you?
I don't know. We could do it on the day. I could come round.
Do it on Christmas Day. I'm not sure about that.
Will you do it for Christmas? You with the family?
Obviously with the family, yeah.
Could come round, have Christmas Day, and then do the pod after. It's quite fun. A couple of glasses of rare or a couple of bottles.
Yeah, no. Well, let's plan that close to the time.
Let's put a pin in it and see, because that would work for... I'm still undecided what I'm going to do. Don't know whether Daddy is back or Alistair's back for December.
Okay.
I mean, I did a fast last year, which I could still do, but it'd be quite nice. Like, imagine that'd be quite cool, because like we are in a way like business partners.
So
I could come around, drinks, have a roast, have Christmas, bring presents.
Well, let's see. Let's see close to the time.
I'll put it down.
Put it in the diary's pencil, it, and I'll let you know close to the time.
Perfect. All right,
man. I'll see you next week.
All right, love and
behave yourself.
Love
and
suburban days, they last so long. In sharpened office, we sing our song, we all sing. We ain't got nothing to do. A big fat nothing for me, nothing for you. Suburban dreams, just out of reach. Work till you die. That's what they teach you at school. Keep that in mind. What's there to lose? My friends and I don't talk on TV, facts and news. Oh.